very first speaker, Roy Chaudette, who's joining you from EPA's Office of Environmental Information. Roy, whenever you're ready to begin, please do.
Great. Well, thank you, Jean, and thank you for everybody for getting online. And I'm hoping we've got a lot of export filers of hazardous waste that want to make sure that they can successfully file through the Customs and Border Protection systems of the Automated Export System and the AES Direct. I'm going to provide basically just an introduction here and hand it off to Beth Reichle, who's going to provide some technical information on exactly what it is you guys need to do for both types of filings. But before I do that, I just want to point out to everybody that we basically have started this hazardous waste export pilot a little over a year ago, actually, and we've had almost 50,000 filings happening using AES and a few using AES Direct. So the good news is the system's up and running. We've had a lot of transactions. The people that have used it really enjoy it. But what we urge everyone to do, just to be careful, is that you might want to test a little bit first before you actually do a live filing for a live shipment. So I think with that, I'm going to pass it over to Beth so that she can talk about what you file in particular. But before I do, I just want to mention, in general, when you file, there's two messages you get back. There's one message you get back. You get an internal tracking number, which means that you've been assigned a number to exit the country, or you don't. And it's really simple. You either provide the information you need to provide, and it checks out through automated checks that we have with AES and AES Direct. And if it doesn't pass, then you don't get an ITN number. And it's that simple. So I think with that, Beth, I'm going to turn it over to you and have you walk us through the whats and hows of filing.
Okay. Good afternoon, everybody. So basically, for those of you who are familiar with the ASDEER, EPA began participating when the pilot started in the PGA record line. So the first sort of piece of information that we have on that line is the EPA license required indicator, and this is a simple why. If the why is present, indicating that you are exporting an item that is subject to the hazardous waste information, the following four pieces of information are what is going to be supplied on the PGA record line for EPA. The first one is always required, and it's the EPA consent number. So the EPA consent number is, in terms of what we're filing in AES, is from your acknowledgement of consent letter, and it's a combination and a slight translation of the printed number. And so basically, in the printed number, for example, this one here, the waste stream is at the end. 001 is your waste stream number. It's sort of a part of that consent number. That waste stream number needs to be included as well. We also remove special characters, and we remove the number in front of the letter. So in this instance, if you look at the number 007/12E/13.001, your consent number goes through the 13 and your waste stream number is 001. You're going to take that number and convert it for AES by removing the slashes, removing the period, and removing the 12 in front of the E, giving you 007/071E13001. So that's one of the important things to know as you are setting up your system or entering things in AES Direct, how you want to translate this number that you get on your acknowledgement of consent letter for the electronic system. The next three items that we're going to talk about required on the PGA line are the RCRA Hazardous Waste Manifest Tracking Number and the EPA Net Quantity Unit of Measure and EPA Net Quantity. These three data elements are conditionally required based on your shipment. again, for this TVA line, you will always have an EPA consent number that is mandatory. And the other items are conditionally required based on your particular shipment. The RCRA hazardous waste manifest number should also be provided in a format that is an alphanumeric format, example below, and this is from is taken from your RCRA manifest, not to be confused with the CDP manifest. The next two items are conditionally required based on the unit of measure indicated for your acknowledgement of consent and whether that unit of measure is provided via the quantity that you are giving Census CBP via the CL1 and the CL2. So depending on your STEER filing, what you already provide, you may not need to provide a separate EPA net quantity, unit of measure, and net quantity. However, if you provide it, it's not going to hurt anything. So it's conditionally required, but if you provide it and you didn't need to, it shouldn't give you any trouble. Basically, kilograms for solid waste and liter for liquid or sludge. The next is the net quantity as the unit of measure. And again, this is going to be conditionally required based on your CL1 CL2 quantity.
So Beth Roy here, let me just go back and let's summarize real quick just so folks got it. So you need the license indicator of Y so the system knows that you're filing EPA consent information. You're providing the consent number, which is absolutely key because we actually give those to customs every night. So we check to make sure that that is indeed a valid consent number. And depending on what it is what waste you're shipping, it may or may not require a hazardous waste manifest tracking number. So in those cases, you will need to provide that where it's required. And same with the net quantity unit of measure and the net quantity. Is that a pretty fair summary, Beth?
Yep, that's a good summary.
Thanks.
So the most common format that we see is the EDI format for submitting this information. So again, this is the PGA record, and it's described in detail in the ASTEER. CBP has updated that information with all of our EPA information for this line. So you can see where we construct this record. We have PGA for the PGA line. We have EP1. Which is the code for EPA. The Y is our license required indicator. Here is our EPA consent number in the correct format without any special characters. Here is the RCRA hazardous waste manifest tracking number. EPA net quantity unit of measure, and your EPA net quantity. So that is the structure for the EDI format.
And Beth, that's 100 kilograms you're showing?
Yes. In the X12 format, this is the same exact information provided in the X12 format with the field layout showing again EP1 as our EPA code. Y for your license indicator, consent number, the RCRA hazardous waste manifest tracking number, EPA net quantity unit of measure, and EPA net quantity. And finally, the AES direct submission of this information. So for a new commodity line, there's the option, does this filing require participating government agency data? And so in order to enter the AES data for EPA hazardous waste, you're going to need to select yes. Now, there's also a consideration for the Schedule B or HTS number that you are providing as to whether this information will show and you'll be able to enter the EPA data. So for some reason, your Schedule B data and clicking Y or Yes for the participating government agent data does not reveal on the next screen EPA information entry block, then please let your rep at Customs and Border Protection or Roy Chade and myself know about it. But this is the new commodity line, and those are the two pieces of information here that are going to be most important for you. The question about participating government agency data and knowing what Schedule B or HTS number you are inputting.
So let me just add in here, Beth. So we've tried to identify the Schedule B codes or HTS codes that we think are going to be exported. But we always learn from you, the filers, that we may not have identified all of them. So what happens is if you put one in there and you click yes and you're not able to get to that next screen, it means that that tariff code hasn't been identified yet to customs to be allowed. And so what we have to do is double check and make sure it's been put into AES Direct so that you can file using that tariff code.
Okay, so once you have entered and completed all the required fields for the new commodity line one and you've clicked yes and you've entered an HTS code that is possibly EPA hazardous waste, you should get a EPA license data screen input. And so you'll need, this is actually first going to be the list of PGAs on the left. You select EPA and you get the EPA submission fields. So this is EPA data being required. That equates to the Y that we were seeing in the EDI and X12 format. The EPA consent number, again, using the same format that we've discussed prior, removing special characters, and in this case, the 12 before the E. Your RCRA tracking number, your net quantity, and your net quantity unit of measure. The user guide is linked to at the bottom of the slide deck here. So if you are unfamiliar with AES Direct, you can reach the user guide from within the link, and I think we've also provided it in the resource page. So it's pretty straightforward. None of these fields have any special characters, so that is one thing to remember when you are entering them into the screen from a piece of paper where they may have special characters. Well, is there anything else you want to add about this slide?
I think that's it.
Okay, and I'll turn it over to you for the roles of the key parties.
All right, so it's really important that everybody does the right handshake here. So if you have someone that's helping you do the EDI filings through AES, it's really important that the software vendor understands the information, meets the standards, and is tested. And the broker filer, it's good that you've tested to make sure that you can do filings so that you're ready. And it's really key that the exporter makes sure that the information that Beth just went over is provided to the broker filer. And ideally, that's done hopefully electronically, so the broker isn't having to hand enter that information. Here is a link to some guides for AES Direct and for how to register for AES Direct. And then here is my contact information. And basically, if you contact me, I can get Beth in and others as needed to help you guys out with this. So I think with that, and again, these slides are available and can be downloaded, so you can get these links and be able to link on them. And Gene, I'm not sure if they're in that resource pain of the Adobe Connect session here, but
That's exactly correct. So again, if you're looking to access some of the resources that Roy was highlighting, you'll find them in a variety of places. If you look on the middle right of your screen under related URLs, we have them hyperlinked on the seminar resources page, but we also have them included as individual links within the related URLs box. You can scroll down there, click on the link of interest, and then press the Browse To button. If that doesn't work for anyone, you can also copy and paste the URL which appears next to the Browse To button and open it up on your own browser window.
Great. So again, my contact information, I think with this we can now, since this is a fairly short presentation, we're holding questions to the end. So I'm going to let our question moderator walk us through the questions, and then I think most of these pretty much I think Beth can answer for now. So with that, Laura, if you would like to do us the honors.
I would be happy to do that, Roy. Can everyone hear me?
We can.
We can, good. We've gotten some big picture questions. Is this AES and AES Direct the same as EPA's CDX?
Okay, well, I'll answer that one. I thought, are you starting at the bottom and working up, or?
Yeah, because this is kind of an overarching question.
Sure.
CDX versus AES, I think that would be of use to everyone.
Sure. So what we've described is the automated export system and the automated export system direct website, which is hosted by Customs and Border Protection. It's not anything that EPA hosts. We give information to Customs so they can check your filings so that they can issue this internal tracking number for the shipment to leave the country, but it is strictly Customs. The Central Data Exchange, CDX, is a separate account that you get at EPA in order to basically apply for a notice. And that would happen well before you ever went to AES or AES Direct. So you apply for a notice to EPA directly, who then communicates with the countries that you're expecting to export to get a consent or not, but to get a consent, which is then provided to you in that acknowledgement of consent number. You would use the information from that filing to do the filing for your customs export. And Laura, I didn't know if you wanted to add anything to that, but I think that's the difference between CDX and AES.
Yeah, that was a really good summary. Once you've obtained your consent, it's good for anywhere from 1 to 3 years, depending on what the country of import says back to us. And will be included in the reference data that we send to Customs and Border Protection. You don't have to do another notice filing unless you want to change any of the terms of that consent or if you wish to renew at the end of the period. But the filing with Customs has to be done on a shipment-by-shipment basis. And that is under Census Regulations in 15 CFR 30. So they're different systems. Now we are having them talk to each other so that shipments are ensured to have valid consents going to the country that they've been declared to be going to and within their consent time period through an automated process versus having to check paper documents at the border. And this is what we mean by we're transitioning from a paper process to an electronic border process, where you will not have to present, once you have transitioned to electronic, you will not have to, you will not have to be presenting a copy of your RCRA manifest to the customs officer. You will be instead entering the manifest tracking number. And that information will be then sent back to EPA on the validated shipments that have been exported. You will not have to be presenting proof of your consent in paper format, because you'll be doing it before you arrive at the border using AES. So hopefully that answers that question. Linda Cook asked, what is the difference with CL1 and CL2?
So Beth, do you want to answer that?
Yeah, this is Beth Reichle speaking. So basically, the quantity that is required for the filing at Lund is always required, and the unit of measure for that quantity is based on the Schedule B code. So for instance, the Schedule B code will dictate what the unit of quantity is, whether it's kilograms or pieces or some other kind of volume. And it will also indicate whether you are required to provide a second quantity. And that second quantity, again, is going to have a unit of measure that is clearly identified in the guidance based on what the Schedule B code is. So in most cases, we believe the Schedule B codes that we have already identified have a wide variety of what the unit of measure is for the CL1 record, which is your first unit of measure, and the CL2 record, which is not always provided. So you may not have a CL2. And so those are the standard commodity line quantities that would be required, which when they do not work for the acknowledgement of consent unit of measure, you have to provide the EPA one.
And Beth, they can test this out to see if this is going to work, right? With the, see if they get any errors if they don't follow the correct unit of measures.
So, the error dictionary will point them to which, if they have errors in unit of measure or the quantity format, the error they get back will be specific enough that the error dictionary should be able to point them in that. So
okay,
if you're filing and getting errors, we recommend you look at the SDR error dictionary.
Right. So the moral of the story, still not clear on what she's saying. Just try testing, and you'll get an error back, and it'll tell you what you did wrong. All right, Laura, next question. Laura may have stepped out. I'm going to step in here. So Mary Cunningham asked, is everything in kilograms? And I think Beth just answered that it's actually a number of different units. It can be kilograms, tons. If it's
but
a liquid.
The EPA quantity, the EPA net quantity unit of measure should be either kilograms or liters.
Or liters, okay.
That's our understanding.
But you only use that if the commodity CL1 or CL2 is not in a volume or weight unit of measure. Sorry, I put myself on mute.
Okay. All right, next one, Laura.
Linda asked, what if we use bill of lading for slabs and not manifest? The reference information for your consent number related to spent lead acid batteries being exported for recovery of lead will not flag as manifest being required. So shipments that are not required to be manifested do not have to enter a manifest tracking number as part of their AES filing. They do, however, still have to validate their consent that they're going to the same country for the terms of the consent, and the date is in the consent window. Chris asked, will you please explain what CL1 and CL2 are again, but hopefully that got answered. Michael asked, does the unit of measure have to be 9 digits?
And Beth?
Yep, the unit of measure is actually a 3 alphanumeric character. And for instance, it's up to 3. In this case, for kilograms, it would be 2. If it was liters, it would be 1. The quantity itself should be 0 filled. And so, yes, if you have a quantity that is less than the field length, you will need to 0 fill it in the EDI format and in the X12 format.
Joe asked, for those exporters that have been filing in AES for the past 2 years under the pilot, thank you very much. Has anything changed since the pilot that we should be aware of?
Roy, do you want to address this?
Not that I know of. The
main things that have changed since we started the pilot and initially worked with pilot people are that it's been expanded to all ports when it became fully operational, and we've definitely changed the list of Schedule B HTS codes
right.
in the system that are allowable for EPA data. So in terms of the filing itself, there have not been changes, but in terms of the breadth of Schedule B codes and the breadth of ports, that has expanded since you first started.
Right. And it's open right now basically to all ports. And
yep.
And you guys need to tell us if you have a problem at all with the tariff code that you're filing, because then we have to work with Census and Customs to get it added in.
Yep. So we need to know about that as soon as possible. Jean asked, if this applies to transporters of the waste, my company is just a transporter. And no, it doesn't, unless your company is contracted to do the filing for the exporter. The exporter is under the regulatory obligation to ensure that the AES filing occurs. So they can obviously hire a filer or broker to do that for them, but they're the ones that are responsible for making sure it gets done. Edward asked, at what point will use of the AES be mandatory? My understanding is that it is currently the exporter's option. They can also opt to send a hard copy of the consent with the manifested shipment. Edward, that is absolutely correct. At this point, we are in a transition period, and we set up the regulatory text to make that explicit. For right now, exporters may make the choice whether to follow the paper process or the electronic process. If they follow the paper process, they are required to instruct their transporters in writing. And by writing, I mean email, fax, hard copy. There just has to be a record that both parties can keep a copy of, that they have instructed their transporter that they will be following the paper process for the shipments at the border, which means that the transporter will then be obligated to give a copy of the RCRA manifest that the shipment is manifested to the customs officer at the port, and will be required to have a hard copy of the consent accompanying the shipment at all times. We are encouraging people during this time, we are working with exporters to transition to the electronic process because obviously it's going to be more efficient. And once you switch over to the electronic process, the data that you file in here will be shared with EPA and will be used within EPA's waste import export tracking system, the WEAP system, to create a draft export annual report that you as the exporter can then simply review rather than having to create your own report that's due by March 1st of every year. You'll be able to simply review the draft report, make sure everything's been reflected, and then sign and submit it electronically.
Right, and that's
but
a separate.
That only
that's
with
a
the
separate.
Electronic.
Yeah, that's a separate interface through CDX at EPA, and I think we're going to cover that in a separate webinar. So again, this focus is mainly doing the customs filings, but because it draws on things that we do at EPA, where you filed us with us directly, it's easy to spill over into that. So anyhow.
Yeah. Once we have gotten to a point where we think it's reasonable that most exporters should have had enough time to transition to electronic,
right,
we will establish the compliance date. We will announce it in a Federal Register notice, and it essentially will say, as of date such and such, all exporters will be required to use the electronic process. We're obviously not there yet, but for right now, it is optional.
And Laura, reporting to EPA directly right now, is that optional or mandatory?
Reporting directly to EPA, I'm not sure what you mean, Roy.
So for notice applications and is that mandatory?
The use of CDX and WEETS for export notices is absolutely mandatory, has been as of December 31st, 2016, for export notices.
Right.
Which I think partially addresses Debbie's question, if I'm exporting hazardous waste, am I required to enter the information about CDX and AES? Yes, because they're different. When you report in CDX, you create your notice, you're requesting consent, and you will receive consent from EPA.
And you provide a fair amount of information for requesting that consent, right, Laura?
Yes. The receiving facility, the amount of waste, the types of waste, the recovery or disposal operations in question, all of that is provided to the country of import and any countries of transit, and they provide their answers back to us. Assuming they consent, we issue an acknowledgement of consent letter electronically to the exporter, and you get your consent numbers for each of the waste streams. Once you have that, then you have the shipment-by-shipment tracking process. And at the border, under the paper process, you have been required to have a hard copy of your consent available for customs to review, and you have been required for manifested shipments, RCRA manifested shipments, to sign, transporters must sign and date the RCRA manifest and give a copy to the customs officer under the paper process. We are now transitioning to an electronic process where you are able to file using AES or AES Direct, enter a handful of additional information. This is in addition to the rest of the information that you're required to file as part of your electronic export information, and validate your consent and provide your manifest tracking number electronically.
And Laura, let me just...
It's much more efficient once you're set up.
Yeah, and so I'm not sure, you know, if we are talking to the actual exporters or the brokers that do these EEI filings. So just to stress an earlier slide, you know, exporters that are self-filers will probably use AES Direct. Exporters that use a broker, the broker's probably going to use this AES system to do the filing. So I think that's really important, because some of you may be thinking, oh my gosh, I've got to learn how to do this. But in fact, this may be something that your export broker may do for you, and you just need to give them this information from the AOC letter.
Okay. We've had a couple of questions about whether this is the same as the e-manifest system that haulers normally use. I'm not sure, but I think you're talking about the customs e-manifest application. Yes, this is different than that. And it's the exporters will be using this system, the exporters or their brokers. The customs e-manifest system is used by the haulers. And the And they also use the ITN number, but the ITN number is issued by AES. So in essence, your exporter has already filed in AES to get you that ITN number that you use in your tracking with the e-manifest application with Customs. There's a question, if we are in Canada, can we enter the information for the exporter if we are the filer?
Roy,
If you're the authorized filer, the regulatory text says the U.S. exporter or the authorized filer. If you are able to file an AES on behalf of your exporter right now, it should still work. You're just going to have to file the additional PGA line. But you may need to work with us separately if you see a problem with that. Jerry Manley asked, can value of goods be a negative number? I don't believe so. And there is some guidance on that in the census materials. But you would need to check with census on that. That's outside of the EPA-related filing. You are being required to file this additional information because you are exporting under the terms that are equivalent to an export license under census regulations. The value of your goods does not affect whether or not you are required to file this. It is the fact that you are being, you are prohibited from export without having consent, without having that AOC letter. That AOC letter is equivalent to an export license. Kathy asked if universal waste is handled the same as slabs. Yes. If your universal waste shipments are typically not required to be manifested, therefore you would not be entering a manifest tracking number. When we send reference data over to Customs, we will be sending back, there's a field that flags whether or not a waste stream level consent number will be manifested or not. So it would have a no next to a universal waste shipment or a slab shipment. Does this paper eliminate the need for a paper customs invoice?
That may be a question. That's a question for customs, not us.
Let me
just reiterate to people, all that we're talking about on this phone call and this webinar primarily, although we stray into the EPA stuff, these are export filings with customs for your hazardous waste EPA-specific information. We're not talking about what's required for customs, and you would have to talk to customs about what you need to file with this export.
Mary Cunningham asked, won't the DOT still require a paper manifest? And by that would be a paper RCRA manifest to be with the transporter. Yes. What is different is the transporter would not be required to give a copy of the manifest to the customs port officer. So you wouldn't be clearing through the port process by giving that copy of the manifest to the customs officer. You would be electronically entering the manifest tracking number, and that would be sent back to EPA. And of course, once EPA's e-manifest system is going on, then we'll be even further along the electronic pathway. But for right now, yes. This doesn't change the fact that you have to have a paper manifest while it's transported in the United States, it changes the process at the port.
And I think that's a really important point. Instead of having paper at the port that actually you have to stop the truck, show the port officer your pieces of paper, your filing in the system is already going to have an ITN number or not, period. That's the benefit of doing this. All right, Laura, next one.
If I'm a broker, is this something that I need to submit every time we're going to export a shipment to Canada? Yes. The requirement to file consent-related information, assuming that you choose the electronic process at this time, but this is a shipment-by-shipment requirement. Just like you have to have a separate tracking document, you have to file an AES or follow the paper process for each shipment.
And folks can correct me online if they want to. But my understanding, if a broker can actually do multiple export filings, so that if you have several shipments crossing, they can do these filings and get the ITNs issued.
Yes. Linda asked, how long in advance does this need to be filed before the truck is set to cross? Those timeframes are set in the census regulations, and it's specific to the mode of transportation. We don't affect that timing. It is a pre-departure filing, though, yes. Do you need to put the ITN number on the manifest or another document to accompany the shipment? I believe you have to provide the ITN number to your transporter so that they have it in case the system is down or for other reasons. For the CBP e-manifest. You do not have to write the ITN number on the RCRA manifest. Let's see what else we've got here. Where in the ACE reports will the EPA consent number be reported?
I think that's a question for customs if you're pulling out AES reports. We really don't know much about the reports that you guys get out of AES.
Okay. Tom asked, when should exporters consider using brokers rather than filing themselves?
Well, I think that's what they call a business decision. And I think that relates to staff time and fees that can be paid. So I don't think we can answer that from our end really clearly.
Linda asked, is there a place that we need to enter the port of export? That is not part of the EPA required information for the shipment. That, I believe, is part of your EEI filing. It's one of the other roughly 114 elements that could potentially apply, but that's not something that we require specifically, and this is solely on the EPA-specific portion. Michelle asked, can you file both electronically and paper for the same shipment for test purposes? Yes.
Yeah, and actually we encourage that just so there's no, if there's any problems at all, we're all aware of it.
Trying to go through, I'm not seeing. I think we've addressed most of the questions.
A new one just came in. A couple minutes.
All right. Could I receive the record file regarding this seminar? Well, there will be an archive. And why is the EPA consent number structure different on the paper notice than the electronic filing format? Confusing. It's a change thing. The good news is that the format that you use for AES, entering it in AES, and the format that you use for entering it on the RCRA eManifest, once eManifest goes live, will be the same.
And Laura, is the format being updated on the consent letters that are being sent out?
Yes, new AOC letters will have a table in the AOC letter that goes waste stream by waste stream and lists the waste stream level consent number that you would enter in AES so that you don't. We have information on the website, and of course there's the information on the slide where we give an example, notice ID number, waste stream number, and this is how you get to the waste stream level consent number. But for new consents issued as of December 31st, they will have all that information already spelled out for you, so you won't have to guess or build anything. Any other questions? There are a couple of questions related to the consent process and how quickly you can get consent, and that's outside of this. So you can email me, Laura Coughlin, coughlin.laura@epa.gov, if you've got questions related to that.
And Laura, do you want to mention the webinar on the 23rd?
Well, this is kind of a different audience, but okay. For those, there is going to be a conference call on the 23rd for U.S. importers.
Oh, sorry about that.
If you're interested in that, please email me separately.
Yeah.
CDX system for this and form are filing the same. John, if by that you mean you've registered in CDX, you're in the CDX system for TRI reporting, and now you want to do weights reporting, it's absolutely the same. You're already registered in CDX. What you need to do is add weights as one of your applications. Right, Roy?
Right. That's right. So Form R is for TSCA, for the Toxic Release Inventory Reporting. And you can add a new program service that includes WEETS, and it takes you right to the export notice application and the report landing page. But again, that's separate from what we're talking for the main purpose of this call, which is the filings through customs systems.
Jeff has a really good question. If you have a RCRA manifest with more than one line item, is there a way to enter all the line items? I believe AES does multi-line filing.
Right, you can have multiple lines.
And Joe asked, some shipments to Canada are exempt from EEI filing. How would AES receive filings for exempt shipments? Well, Joe, the exemption regarding shipments to Canada does not apply to shipments of commodities that occur under the terms of an export license. And all exports that are subject to RCRA consent requirements are shipments occurring under the terms of an export license. Census has confirmed that those shipments are subject to EEI filing requirements, regardless of destination or shipment value. So, I think that's about it. Yeah, I'm not seeing.
Oh, in CDX, it's called WEETS, WIETS. Waste Import Export Tracking System.
Yep. So I'm not seeing any additional questions pertaining to AES and AES filing.
Right.
Oh, Jamie asked, if we file an AES, do we still have to put it in the RCRA manifest, the consent number? Yes. Okay. I think at this time we're ready to wrap it up.
Okay. So Roy, any final statements that you'd like to offer to the audience before I give them the closeout instructions for providing feedback and accessing the resources?
Sure. I want to say that I appreciate everybody getting on. This is a bit of a new experience for a lot of people, but I think once you get going on this and it gets to be routine, this will be a lot more efficient than just dealing with paper. The good news is this is tied into things that we do with other countries so that it all kind of works together. So I would urge you to reach out to me to look at getting going. And we'd be happy to get you going with filings through AES and AES Direct. And I guess since we've been talking about it, also any of the filings directly to EPA. So just let me know what your interest is, and we can look at getting you going.
Okay, excellent. With that, let me go ahead and walk through just a final few reminders for our audience out for today's live broadcast. A number of you have asked if it's possible to obtain copies of the presentation materials. I do want to remind everybody that those items are currently available along with the resources that were discussed in today's presentation, a number of those links to AES and AES Direct resources. Those are currently available from the seminar resources or homepage. Some people have asked if they're going to receive the recorded or archived version of today's webinar, and we did record today's session. As soon as that archive is available, you will automatically receive an email with information on how you can access those resources. So I did want to confirm that, again, the materials are currently available to access or to download, and you'll find information about the organizers as well from the seminar homepage, and then, of course, the archive will be shared with you via email as soon as it's available. We do often get a number of questions about participation certificates, CEUs, or PDHs for these events. We do not offer CEUs or PDHs for our webinars. However, you can earn a participation certificate that you can at least save for your own records, and you may be able to earn credit for attending today with your own organization. We have a short online feedback form that you'll be given a link to for today's session. If you fill out that online feedback form and check a box on it, you can then download or print out a participation certificate, and you'll also be able to save it as a PDF file immediately upon submission. I do read each and every one of those submissions. There were well over 200 individuals who joined us from all over the country for today's live broadcast, so I encourage you to take a moment and fill out the online feedback form. If you happen to join as a group from one location, each person can fill out their own feedback form to get a copy of that seminar participation certificate for their own records. So again, thank you for those of you who joined us for today. Thank you to the organizers and instructors who put together and offered today's live broadcast. And I do, again, want to remind everybody that you will automatically receive an email as soon as the archive is available for today's live broadcast. So with that, I think that's the end of the formal conclusion reminders that I have for everyone today. Be sure to fill out your feedback and let us know what you thought of today's session. And again, one last thank you to everyone who joined us for our live broadcast. This will be the formal conclusion for today's live session.